On this Food Friday, we are talking about the farm-to-table lifestyle.
Our guest wrote a book about how he cultivated a feast made only from the bounty of his farm. Joining us is Kurt Timmermeister. His book is called Growing a Feast, The Chronicle of a Farm-to-Table Meal. Kurt, welcome to Central Time.
Oh, great. Thank you for having me.
So how did you make the decision to leave Seattle and your restaurant and settle on a farm? That seems like a pretty big move.
I did it fairly gradually. I had purchased a small amount of land originally and then picked up another piece next to it, and I just came to love it. I really enjoyed it, and I enjoyed the city less and less. And then finally I sold my restaurant and devoted my life full-time to the farm.
So after you made that move to be full-time on the farm, was there a moment or two? Because, you know, that it's a pretty big jump, and all of a sudden you're trying to grow things, and you've got animals to take care of and all of that. Was there a moment or two where you wondered, what am I doing here? What was this the right thing?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, honestly, I probably still think that. I'm mm-hmm. kind of like, is this really everything I wanted? Because I still love the city. I still like to go to the city and enjoy it. But I'm very much grounded on my farm now, and the food especially. I've eaten such great food for so many years now that it would be very hard for me to go back and have food that I didn't grow myself.
So let me ask a practical question, because you're talking to people in Wisconsin, and there are still a lot of farmers and connection to rural areas in Wisconsin. For somebody to move to a farm, you know, from the urban background that you had, how do you train yourself to be a farmer? How do you figure out how to take care of a cow, how to grow a crop?
So I grew up in the city in Seattle in a neighborhood and knew nearly nothing about farms. Seattle is not anywhere near as rural as Wisconsin, none in the least. And I just made a lot of mistakes. I read lots of books about it, failed at many things. I wasn't very good at growing vegetables. I had lousy soil for vegetables. But then I kind of stumbled upon a cow, and I bought this cow because I wanted some milk. It sounded like a nice idea. Didn't know enough really about it to do it, but I still went ahead, asked lots of people about it. And I found that I have great land for pasture. I really like cows. I like milking cows, and I like making cheese. And as it turns out, we make very good cheese now.
Excellent. Well, you started hosting these cookhouse dinners
right.
to support your farm. Tell us about that tradition and how it got started.
I had seen a supper club in Portland a few years beforehand, and I really liked the idea of a group of people, 20 people around one big table, sharing a meal that would show up, and they wouldn't know what was going to be for dinner, and they kind of had this leap of faith. And so I started this cookhouse, this supper club, and people would come every Sunday. It would be at like 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and they'd have, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9 courses, and we would make it from what we grew, you know, pork and beef and chicken and eggs and, you know, some of the vegetables that I did eventually get a little better at, and fruits, and we would make pickles and salamis and sausages and cheese and so on. And it was really extraordinary and super tasty.
Now, you say we, so I'm guessing it's not just you out there working this whole farm. It takes a village, right, to have a farm?
Yeah, I don't know if it's a whole village, but I would always bring in a cook to help me from the city or from the island. And then I would always have guys that would help me, you know, so that I wasn't milking cows every day. I would get a day off from that so that I could concentrate on the dinner and so on.
But is it primarily you working the farm?
When I started, absolutely. Now we make a fair amount of cheese now. So there are more people working there. But originally it was just me, and then a cook would come out on Sunday, and a guy would come out a couple days to help with the cows and so on. But it was, I loved it, and I still love it, and it keeps me vital and excited about it.
I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about the connection to the land and to the food, because these days you hear an awful lot about that, about how over the last 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years, whatever, we've sort of gotten away from knowing where our food comes from, knowing, you know, the source of the animals or the crops.
Right.
And that sounds like it's a big part of sort of where you're at, that connection between
Absolutely.
Where you live and where the food is.
I wrote this book, Growing a Feast, is that I wanted to show what went into, in this case, one dinner. And it starts with the birth of a calf a couple of years earlier, and then we make some cheese that's aged for a couple of years in this underground cheese cave on the farm. And I wanted to say that food has great stories, and it involves great, interesting people, and it involves different places and different techniques and different skills. And I want you to know that they are there. And it's not that important to me what you eat necessarily, but to know that there are fascinating stories behind it. And hopefully that will lead you to find better food with great stories behind it that's well made and well grown and well harvested and prepared and so on. And that's what I was getting at in growing a feast.
Yeah, and take us back to the birth of that calf, because it sort of starts out the book.
Yeah.
And it almost, I don't know if this is too big a word, but it almost sounds like an epiphany of sorts for you.
I think so. I mean, we've had a lot of calves born at the farm now, but I still put great importance on these days. I mean, we have, you know, maybe 10 or 12 or 15 calves born every year, and it's still exciting. It's still a big moment. I put a great importance on it. I put a bigger importance on it when a heifer is born than a bull calf, but I still get excited, and we take incredible care of these cows to make sure they're super healthy, and eventually they'll be part of the herd for milking.
Now, in your book, you focus on one particular feast and
right.
all of the work that went into it. And since this is radio, you know, we cannot see pictures or hear the sizzles. So I'd love to have you describe it. Tell us what you served.
Absolutely. It starts out with these pizzas, very thin pizzas, in this wood-fired oven with tomato sauce and fresh herbs. Then we have this antipasti plate with a large variety of different things that we make on the farm. It's like whey ricotta, membrillo, a quince paste from the quince out of the orchard. Some mushrooms that we forage, some chanterelle mushrooms, which are big here, different kinds of cheeses, pickled pumpkins, all this in an antipasti plate. And we have a soup made with this beautiful French heirloom squash with brown butter and fresh sage, shaved cabbage salad with pickled red currants, poached farm eggs. These beautiful pastured eggs are super golden, almost orange, with lots of kale and béarnaise sauce. Pasta, a beautiful tagliatelle with chicken gizzards and hearts and cipollini onions, super rich and tasty, earthy, with some breadcrumbs. Am I making you hungry yet?
You're doing pretty well, actually.
And then a beef roast that we braise in milk, because we have lots of milk around the farm, and braise so it's super tender, and then we take the sauce out and puree it so it's this beautiful kind of caramelly looking color and super rich. Serve that with some bay leaf potatoes, some little fingerling potatoes that are boiled with lots of bay leaf, and then smashed a little bit with some butter on it.
This is a full-on feast. It sounds like a Roman banquet.
It's kind of it's kind of overwhelming. People would come for hours. It would be, you know, 4 or 5 hours sitting at this big long fir table, and people would really get to know each other and talk to people. And it's not a 45-minute dinner. It's hours, and it's like. You have a different sense of time, and you just kind of sit there and enjoy it. It's not, you're not eating, you know, great volumes of food, but it's great variety, and it's very much about what the farm produces. It's about milk and cream and butter and these big hearty flavors.
Well, let's focus on the squash soup for a second, because we've already shared the recipe on our Facebook page.
Excellent.
And if you could maybe fill us in and tempt some people to head over there and see what it's all about.
Absolutely. These are beautiful French heirloom squash that we raise. We raise a few different squash every year. I change out because I want to try the newest kind of interesting flavors. But this is one. It's called it's Brodé. It's kind of this kind of mottledy looking orange one. It looks kind of ugly, but beautiful in its ugliness. And we cube it up, and we kind of steam it with a little bit of water until it's totally broken down. Some onions in it as well, maybe some fresh herbs in there. And then when it's completely broken down, we'll puree it, either with like a hand, like a burr mixer and a blender. Put in some more, of course, some milk, because we love milk. And it'll be this really silken texture. We'll usually put it through a sieve just to make sure that it's really, really smooth and silky. And then season it pretty well, lots of salt, lots of pepper. And then we'll take some butter, beautiful Jersey cream butter. We raise Jersey cows. And just brown it, not burn it, but just bring it till it's really nutty and brown. Pour that on top, a little bit of sage in there as well. And the sage will kind of pop when it hits that brown butter because of the oils in the sage. And then it's kind of crunchy, and you got the silky, and it got this little beautiful brown nutty taste. I think it's a gorgeous soup. And we serve with hot hard rolls, super simple rolls, a again with more Jersey cream butter on the side as well.
I'm guessing butter figures prominently into
butter,
a lot of this. I like it. Yeah, we're from
butter.
Wisconsin. We're into butter.
Yeah.
Well, what advice do you have for people who may be interested in being closer to their food and to grow their own food, but they may not have at their disposal a farm like you have?
It is challenging. I mean, because our food system's changed. Thankfully, it's also changed for the positive. We still have lots of farmers markets around the country. You have the fabulous one in Madison. That's the easiest thing. Go to the farmers market in the season. It's a great way to connect to the person who's responsible for that food, and it can tell you how they grew it and why they grew it and what they love and how they cook it. That's the easiest way. Off season, a little harder. I'm also like I sell to grocery stores. I sell cheese, so I deal with large stores all the time. I don't think they're bad places. Absolutely not. I'm very much the one who will say, if you want a great chicken or you want great beef or great pork, bother that store and say, I want something better. I want some great pork in your store because that's important to me now. And I think they'll respond to it. I think they'll source it, and they will find better and better quality food for you. But the farmers markets are the easiest way.
For All sure. right. Well, that's a great place to leave it. Kurt, thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, my pleasure.
That was Kurt Timmermeister, author of Growing a Feast, The Chronicle of a Farm-to-Table Meal.